Good morning. You're listening to KRBD's special programming for children, created in cooperation with the Ketchikan Education Association and featuring local teachers. Thanks to everyone who recorded themselves and sent in those recordings.
Sit, spot, find a dot, find a spot to sit on. Sit, spot, find a dot in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hello, Ketchikan. This is Mrs. DeAngelis. I teach music at Fawn Mountain Elementary and Point Higgins Elementary. And I miss seeing all your smiling faces and can't wait to see you again and play all of our music games, sing, and make music. Take care. Peace and love to you and yours.
Hello again, listeners. I'm Jeff Glover, and we're reading The World According to Humphrey. Humphrey was happily the class hamster in room 26. He's attentive and writes in his own tiny notebook he keeps hidden in his cage. And he's in love with his teacher and owner, Miss Mack. But then his world fell apart. It turns out Miss Mack was a substitute for the real teacher, Mrs. Brisbane. All in just one morning, Humphrey had to say goodbye to his owner, Miss Mack, and be introduced to Mrs. Brisbane, who disdains the idea of having a hamster for a class pet. She won't take him home for the evening, so for the first time in his hamster life, Humphrey is alone in a dark, dark classroom. Well, let's pick up the story again. I tried to pass the time by writing in my notebook about Petorama and my days at Miss Mack's apartment. Writing took my mind off my jittery nerves, but eventually my writing paw began to ache and I had to stop my scratchings. If only I could roam free as I had at Miss Mack's apartment. Then I remembered the lock that doesn't lock. It took only a few seconds to jiggle the door open. I skittered across the table. Then, grasping the top of the table leg tightly, I closed my eyes and slid to the ground. Ah, freedom! I dashed along the shiny floor. I darted between the tables and chairs. I stopped to nibble a peanut underneath Stop Giggling Gail's chair. It tasted delicious and made the coolest crunching sound. I chewed and chomped and gnawed and nibbled, and when I stopped, I heard the sound. Thump, thump, thump. Just like the story Mrs. Brisbane had read us. Thump, thump, thump. Closer and closer down the hall, coming toward room 26. Then, rattle, scratch, rattle, scratch. Thump, thump. Thump! Suddenly, I longed for the protective comfort of my cage. I dropped what was left of the peanut and scampered back. But when I got to the table, I thought a terrible thought. I had slid down the smooth, shiny leg straight down. But how was I going to climb up again? I flung myself against the table leg, grabbed on, and pushed up, up, up. But I had only made a little progress when I began to slide down, down, down. I was right back where I'd started. The rattling got louder. The sounds weren't coming toward room 26 anymore. They were coming in room 26. Just then, I noticed a long cord running down from the blinds. Without hesitation, I leapt up and grabbed the cord and began swinging back and forth. My stomach churned and I'd wished I'd never touched that peanut. But with each swing, I got a little higher off the ground. As soon as I saw the edge of the table, I closed my eyes and dived toward it. Whoosh! I slid across the table and scampered into the cage. As I pulled the door behind me, I was suddenly blinded by light. The something had turned on the lights and was clomping across the floor. It was huge and heavy and coming right toward me. Just then, my eyes adjusted to the light, and I saw the thing. It was a man! "Well, well, who have we here? A new student!" a voice boomed. The man was smiling down at me. My, that was a lovely piece of fur across his upper lip. A nice black mustache. He bent down to peer in at me. "I'm Aldo Amato, and who are you, huh?"
"I'm Humphrey, and you scared me half to death," I told him.
But as always, all that came out was squeak, squeak, squeak. Aldo squinted at the sign on my cage. Oh, you're Humphrey. Hope I didn't scare you half to death, he said with a laugh. I've just come to clean the room. I come every night. But where have you been? He said. He rolled up a big cart with a bucket and mops and brooms and all kinds of bottles and rags on it. Oh, that's right, he replied, as if he were having a real conversation. Mrs. Brisbane came back today. She's a good teacher, you know, Humphrey. Been teaching here a long time. Wish I had a good teacher like her. Say, do you like music, Humphrey? Squeak, squeak, squeak. I tried to tell him I love music almost as much as I love Miss Mac. Suddenly, a song came blasting out of the radio on his cart, and he set to work, sweeping, mopping, and moving desks, dusting. But Aldo Amato didn't just dust and mop. He spun and swayed. He hopped and leaped. He twisted and twirled. How do you like the floor show? Aldo asked me as he grasped the mop like a dancer holding his partner. Get it? It's a floor show, because I'm cleaning the floor. Then Aldo roared the biggest roar of a laugh I'd ever heard. His big mustache shook so much, I thought it might fall off. You like that? I'll show you real talent, Humphrey. Aldo Amato picked up his broom and very carefully stood it up with the very tip balancing on one outstretched fingertip. It wiggled from side to side, but Aldo moved with the broom and managed to keep it balanced straight in the air for an amazingly long time. When he was finished, he bowed deeply and said, What do you think? I'm going to join the circus. And he roared again. Then Aldo wiped his forehead with a big bandana and sat down at the table where AJ usually sits. You know what, Humphrey? You're such good company. I think I'll take my dinner break with you. Do you mind?
Please, please, please,
I squeaked. Aldo pulled his chair right up to my cage. Hey, you're a handsome guy, huh? Like me. Here, a little bit of green won't hurt you, will it? He tore off a piece of lettuce from his sandwich and pushed it through the bars. Of course, I hid it in my cheek pouch. Aldo chuckled. Good for you, Humphrey. Always save something for a rainy day. The two of us shared a very pleasant meal, as Aldo told me about how he used to have a regular job where he worked during the day. But then his company closed down, and he couldn't find a job for a long time. He couldn't even pay the rent when he was lucky enough to get hired here at Longfellow School. He was glad to get the job, but it's lonely working at night because his friends work during the day. They can never get together like they used to. I tried to squeak to him about all the creatures like me that are also nocturnal, and Aldo listened. I know you're trying to tell me something, Humphrey, but I can't tell what it is. Maybe you're just saying I'm not alone after all, huh?
Squeak!
He understood. Aldo stood up and threw his trash into the plastic bag on his car. Well, I've got a lot of other rooms to clean, my friend, but I'll be back tomorrow night. Maybe I'll take my dinner break with you again. Aldo pushed his cart toward the door and reached for the light switch.
No, no, no.
I squeaked, dreading the thought of being plunged into darkness again. Aldo stopped. I hate to leave you in the dark, but if I don't turn off the lights, I could lose my job. He clumped back across the floor to the window. Tell you what, I'll leave the blinds open a little. There's a nice light right outside your window. After he turned off the lights and left, I chomped on the lettuce I'd saved and basked in the warm glow of the streetlight and my new friendship with Aldo. Tip 2. Hamsters are not picky about their food and eat very little. Make sure to feed your pet a wide variety of tasty foods. Guide to the Care and Feeding of Hamsters, Dr. Harvey H. Hammer. Chapter 3. The Two Faces of Mrs. Brisbane. That week was busy, 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 but I learned a lot. I learned all the capitals of the United States. I didn't say I remembered them all, but I learned them all. I learned about how water changes from solid to liquid to gas. I learned how to subtract fractions. I learned something else, something very weird. There are two Mrs. Brisbanes. And I thought one Mrs. Brisbane was one too many. The first Mrs. Brisbane is a good teacher, just like Aldo said. She's better than Miss Mac was at getting AJ to lower his voice. She's better at getting Heidi to raise her hand before she blurts something out loud. Of course, nobody could get Speak Up Saya to raise her hand or to blurt anything out loud. Saya is so quiet and gentle, she never gives an answer. If the teacher calls on her, she stares down at her desk without saying a word. But when it's Saya's turn to clean my cage and feed me, she holds me in her hand so gently, I feel like I'm floating on a cloud. "Hello, Humphrey," she whispers. "Your fur is so beautiful." I always feel calmer when Saya holds me. She's so nice. I wish Mrs. Brisbane would leave her alone. Miss Mack hardly ever called on Saya once she realized how shy she was. But Mrs. Brisbane calls on her all the time. She won't leave her alone. "Saya, speak up, please. I know you know the answer," she'd say while Saya stared at the top of her desk as if she were watching a TV show there. But I was shocked when Mrs. Brisbane got annoyed with Saya, sweet, shy Saya, and said, "You will stay in during recess." Saya still stared down without moving a muscle, but a minute later, I saw something wet drop from Saya's eye to the tabletop. I hated Mrs. Brisbane. Of course, I don't go out to recess. In fact, I'm glad, since it's a great time to catch up on my sleep. So I was there when Mrs. Brisbane talked to Saya, and I was all ready to squeak up on her behalf if necessary. Mrs. Brisbane brought a stack of papers to the table and sat down across from Saya. "Saya, you think I'm being mean to you, don't you?" Saya slowly shook her head no. I heartily nodded my head yes, but no one was looking at me. "But I wouldn't call on you if I didn't know that you know the answers," the teacher explained. "Look at your papers and tests. You get 100% on everything, spelling, science, geography, and arithmetic. Your vocabulary is excellent, but I've never heard you speak. Can you tell me why?" I checked my notebook, and I was pretty impressed. I only got an 85% on that last vocabulary test. This girl is smart. Saya still did not speak. "Saya, I'm going to have to send a note home to your parents. Maybe they can help me figure out what to do," said Mrs. Brisbane. Saya looked up, very frightened. "No, please," she said. Mrs. Brisbane looked surprised. She reached over and patted Saya's arm. "I won't send a note now, if you'll promise to try." Saya looked back down at the desk and nodded. "I'll tell you what, I won't call on you if you promise that sometime within the next week you'll raise your hand on your own and answer a question. Is that a deal?" Saya nodded, very slowly this time. "You have to say it," Mrs. Brisbane told her. "Deal," Saya whispered. "Terrific," said Mrs. Brisbane, smiling. "Now, how would you like to erase the board for me?" Saya jumped up and hurried to the board. All the students in room 26 liked to erase the board for some reason. Mrs. Brisbane was sure hard to figure out. She hadn't been mean to Saya at all. She just did what a teacher is supposed to do. I liked this Mrs. Brisbane. I even liked the pink blouse she had on. But at the end of the day, when the students were gone, the second Mrs. Brisbane came back, the really scary one, she straightened up the room and came over to the window to close the blinds. I could only hope that Aldo would open them for me later. She looked down and saw that the table around me was messy. The bag of shavings used for my bedding had torn, and bits of litter were scattered all over the table. Garth had done the cleaning and left the lid off my treats box. The whole table looked untidy. "Good grief," said Mrs. Brisbane in a very unhappy voice. I decided to take a spin on my wheel. Usually that cheers people up. But not Mrs. Brisbane. She started to clean the table, getting paper towels and cleaning spray and muttering to herself the whole time. "Not my job," she grumbled. "These children are not responsible. All I need is somebody else to take care of. Some rodent." Nobody says rodent quite the way Mrs. Brisbane does. Then she looked down at me with angry eyes and said, "You are a troublemaker. Somehow, I'm going to get rid of you." Then she grabbed her purse and her papers and stormed out of room 26. For once, I didn't mind being left alone. I didn't even mind the tick, tick, tick of the clock. I was just glad, glad, glad that the second Mrs. Brisbane was gone. I was worried about what she'd said, but I kept my mind occupied by practicing my vocabulary words until the light was completely gone. If Saya got 100% correct, why couldn't I? Then I sat and waited. Suddenly, bright lights blinded my eyes as the door swung open and a familiar voice roared, "Never fear! Aldo's here!" Aldo rolled his cart over to my cage and put his face right down next to mine. "How's it going, Humphrey?" he asked. I tried squeaking out my story, but Aldo didn't quite catch what I was saying. "Whoa, pal, something's got your tail in a tizzy." "Well, this should cheer you up." Aldo reached into a brown paper bag, pulled something out, and dangled it in front of my cage. "Something to gnaw on, little buddy," he said, opening the door. "Joy, joy, joy. A tiny dog biscuit. One of Miss Mac's friends gave me one of these once. You can crunch on it forever."
"Ha ha! Suddenly there's a smile on your face," Aldo beamed with pride. "Now I'll clean this room real fast so we can eat our dinner together."
I never saw anybody move as fast as Aldo. He turned the music up full blast. Then he mopped and polished and swept and scrubbed while I nibbled and gnawed on my biscuit. When he was finished, Aldo pulled a chair up to my cage and took out his big sandwich.
"You know, Humphrey, some folks might think I'm crazy talking to a hamster, but you're better company than a lot of people I know. Here, have a nice salad. It's good for you."
He tore off a tiny piece of lettuce and pushed it through the wires of my cage.
"Thank you,"
I squeaked.
"You're welcome," said Aldo. "So, what were we talking about last night?" "Oh, yeah, loneliness. You know, I have friends, Humphrey, but during the day when I'd like to go do something, go bowling or to a movie or something, they're at work. And when they want to do something, I'm at work. Of course, there's the weekend, but I usually see my family, you know, my brothers and his family, my nieces and nephews. I got a big family."
Suddenly, Aldo bopped the side of his head with the palm of his hand.
"Whoa, Humphrey, I never told you. My nephew, he's in your class. Richie Rinaldi, he sits over there."
He pointed to the far side of the room. "He always has the neatest desk in the class. He'd better, or he'll hear from his uncle. Do you know him?"
"Of course," I squeaked.
"Repeat that, please, Richie. One of the nicest boys in the class." But he mumbled a lot and usually had to repeat something two or three times to be understood. Aldo crunched his bag and tossed it into his trash can.
"Well, I'm out of here. You know, they got a frog in room 16. But he's not good company like you are. He sings nice, though."
"Sing? I'll sing for you, Aldo," I thought. "Squeak, squeak, squeak."
"Don't worry. I don't like him nearly as much as you, my friend," Aldo said.
He opened the blinds to let the light in. Just as he was going out the door, Aldo said,
"See you next week, Humphrey."
Next week. A cold chill came over me. Tomorrow was Friday. When Miss Mac was in room 26, she took me home for the weekend. But if Mrs. Brisbane didn't take me home, I'd have two very long days and nights with no one, not even Aldo, to feed me or chat with me. Even worse, what if Mrs. Brisbane did take me to her house? What fate would await me there? I had plenty to keep me busy the rest of the night, worrying about Mrs. Brisbane and how she planned to do away with me.
"Miss Mac, please come back."
Tip 3. Hamsters enjoy a change in routine. Among their favorite activities are eating, grooming themselves, climbing, running, spinning, taking a nap, and being petted. Guide to the Care and Feeding of Hamsters, Dr. Harvey H. Hammer. Chapter 4. The Most Important Man in the World. Luckily, Friday went by smoothly. Sorry to say, Saya didn't raise her hand, but Heidi Hopper did.
Amazing!
AJ actually whispered. Richie cleaned my cage. I tried to imagine him with a big black mustache like his Uncle Aldo. Later, when Mrs. Brisbane asked him to name the capital of Kentucky, Richie said, "Hot dog." Everyone giggled, of course, especially Stop Giggling Gail, otherwise known as Gail Morgenstern.
Repeat that, please, Richie, said the teacher.
Richie realized he'd made a mistake, so he tried again.
"Frankfurter," he said.
More giggles, explosive giggles.
Try again, Richie, said Mrs. Brisbane, who was on the verge of smiling herself.
Frankfurt,
he said proudly. That was the correct answer, by the way. So you see, it wasn't exactly a bad day in room 26. It's just that I was jittery, wondering what would happen to me when the bell rang. Would I be left alone? Hungrily, utterly forsaken for two whole days, or would I be a captive in the haunted house of Mrs. Brisbane?
At last, the bell rang, and the students flew out of the door like a flock of homing pigeons in a movie Miss Mac showed us. Just then, the room mothers stopped by. One was Heidi Hopper's mom, and the other one was Art Patel's. That is, pay attention, Art. They came to talk to Mrs. Brisbane about Halloween, which was less than 2 weeks away. I didn't know what Halloween was, but it sure sounded scary, especially when they talked about bringing bats and witches, and even worse, cats, right into the classroom. Shiver, quiver, shake. What could they be thinking? I was about ready to fling open the door of my cage and escape when the door opened and in walked the principal, Mr. Morales. Mr. Morales is the most important person at Longfellow School. He runs the place, and everyone respects him. You can tell. For one thing, Mr. Morales always wears a tie. No one else in the whole school wears a tie except Mr. Morales. For another thing, when Mr. Morales comes into the room, everyone stops what they're doing and waits to see what he has to say. And for a third thing, both Miss Mack and Mrs. Brisbane sometimes threaten to send a misbehaving student to Mr. Morales's office. As soon as the teacher mentioned the principal's name, the student would start acting very, very nice. "Good afternoon, ladies," said Mr. Morales. He was wearing a light blue shirt and a tie that had tiny books all over it. Everybody said, "Hello." "Well, how's your first week back, Sue?" he asked. Sue was apparently Mrs. Brisbane, although I'd never actually thought of her having a first name before. She said it was great to be back and what a wonderful class it was, which obviously pleased the room mothers. Then Mr. Morales leaned over my cage and smiled. His tie dangled right over my head. "I'll bet you're enjoying this furry little pupil," he said with a grin. I expected Mrs. Brisbane to tell him what a troublemaking rodent I was, but instead she forced a smile and said, "Well, yes, but he's quite a bit of extra work." Mr. Morales waved a finger at me. He didn't seem to hear what Mrs. Brisbane said. "I always wanted one of these fellows," he said, "but my papa wouldn't let me have one. Sure is cute." Mrs. Brisbane cleared her throat. "Yes, but I'm afraid he's a little distracting. I was going to see if Mr. Kim in room 12 wants him." I was shocked. Luckily, so were the room mothers. "Oh, no, the children just love Humphrey," said Mrs. Patel. "Heidi talks about him all the time. It's a wonderful way to teach the kids responsibility," Mrs. Hopper said. "Yes, but it's a little too much responsibility for me," Mrs. Brisbane sighed. "At least I have a couple days away from him this weekend." "You're not taking him home with you?" asked Mrs. Patel. Mrs. Brisbane backed away from the cage. "Oh, no, it's out of the question."
"But Miss Mack always took him home," said Mrs. Hopper.
"He'll be fine. He has plenty of food," Mrs. Brisbane answered very, very firmly. The room mothers were silent a second. Mr. Morales was still wiggling his finger at me. Then Mrs. Hopper spoke up.
"Why don't the kids take turns bringing Humphrey home for the weekend? They can sign up. We'll talk to their parents and give them instructions. It'll be a great experience."
"Some people might not want him," said Mrs. Brisbane.
"Squeak for yourself, Mrs. Brisbane."
"That's fine," said Mrs. Hopper. "There'll be plenty who will."
"I think it's great," Mrs. Patel agreed.
"I'd take him today, but we're going up to the lake for the weekend."
"Oh, I'd take him too," said Mrs. Hopper. "But we're painting the house and the place is a mess. Next week for sure."
"Yes, I could do it next week," Mrs. Patel agreed. Mrs. Brisbane smiled a fake smile. "So who's going to take him this weekend?" The room mothers looked at one another.
"I could make a few quick calls. Maybe the Rinaldis," Mrs. Patel suggested.
"Call, call, call,"
I squeaked. Suddenly, Mr. Morales stood up straight.
"I've a better idea," he announced. "I'll take Humphrey home for the weekend. My kids will love him. And starting next week, you can have the students take turns."
The three women were almost as surprised as I was.
"Don't worry, he'll be in good hands," Mr. Morales assured them.
"Well, I guess I would be. After all, I was going home with the most important person at Longfellow School." As he drove me to his house, Mr. Morales told me how he'd always wanted a hamster when he was a kid, but his dad always said they didn't need another mouth to feed.
I argued with him, Humphrey. I said, "Papa, I will feed him off my own plate."
And Papa said we'd have to buy the cage and stuff to put in it. I guess he was right, Humphrey. We couldn't afford it. He smiled his big smile. But not anymore. Now I'm the principal of my own school. I told you he was important. His house was nice, but I didn't get to see much of it, because as soon as we came to the door, two little whirlwinds tumbled into the room, shrieking and squealing. Quiet down now, you'll frighten the little fellow, Mr. Morales told them. He got that right. He introduced us. The little boy, who was about 5, was named Willie. He kept poking his fingers through the wires of the cage. I was about to bite him, pure instinct. But then I remembered, this is the son of the most important person at Longfellow School. So I didn't. The little girl, who was about 7, was named Brenda. She kept sticking her face up against the cage and squealing. I tried squeaking back at her, but I don't think she could hear me. Mr. Morales tried to quiet them down. He explained that I was a guest for the weekend, and they had to treat me with respect. They didn't listen. A pretty lady rushed through the room, jingling her car keys. I'm late. I have a house to show. She glanced in my direction. We'll talk about that later. Adios. Mr. Morales wished her luck, and she was gone. Then he carried me into the den with Willie and Brenda clinging to his legs and yelping. My cage was swinging back and forth so much, I was getting air sick. Or cage sick? Mr. Morales set my cage on a table in their family room. Now get back and listen to me, he told his children. I'll tell you all about him.
Can we take him out? Screamed Willie. Can we put him in my room? Shouted Brenda. Can he sleep with me tonight?
We can't do anything until you settle down, Mr. Morales said. Bravo, Mr. Morales, I thought. But still, the children didn't listen. The most important person at Longfellow School was not treated with respect in his own house. Willie lurched forward and swung open the cage door.
Oh, there's poo in there, he screamed. Where? Where?
Shrieked Brenda. Willie pointed to my potty corner, which I thought was unspeakably rude of him.
I want to hold him, said Brenda, grabbing me.
She squeezed me so hard I let out a squeal.
Stop, said Mr. Morales. Put him back right now.
She opened her hand and dropped me onto the floor of my cage. Luckily, I landed in a pile of soft bedding. Luckily, I didn't land in my poo. I was a little dizzy, but I heard Mr. Morales send Willie and Brenda to their rooms.
I will not allow you to mistreat an animal. Upstairs, door shut, no playing until I say you can, he said.
Suddenly, Mr. Morales didn't look so important. He slumped down in the chair next to my cage and loosened his tie. Now you know my secret, Humphrey. At school, everybody listens to me. At home, nobody listens to me, he said. Mr. Morales looked tired, tired, tired. Above our heads came the sounds of thumping and bumping. It sounded as if the ceiling was about to fall in. They're bouncing on their beds, Humphrey. Not supposed to do that either, he said. He slowly rose and went to the stairway in the hall.
Willie, Brenda, stop that now,
he yelled. Surprisingly, the thumping and bumping stopped.
They listened,
I squeaked when the principal sat down again. But the thumping and bumping began again in a minute. I wish I knew what to do, he said. Some way to teach them a lesson. I nodded. A lesson is just what those children needed. And I was just the hamster to teach them. Tip 4. Never, ever squeeze, pinch, or crush a hamster. If it runs away, squeals, or mutters, leave the hamster alone. Guide to the Care and Feeding of Hamsters, Dr. Harvey H. Hammer. Chapter 5. Plans are hatched. When Mr. Morales went into the kitchen to get a glass of water, I carefully opened the lock that doesn't lock and slipped out of my cage. I leapt over to the chair, then scampered down to the floor and hid in the corner behind the long curtains. Mr. Morales returned and sat down. The children were still thumping and bumping and were now screaming and screeching as well.
Say, Humphrey, maybe you need some water too, he said and leaned toward my cage.
Mr. Morales gasped when he saw that it was empty.
Humphrey, where did you go?
Oh, I should have known you'd escape. I'd run away from those kids if I could too. But do me a favor, Humphrey. Please come out. In a panic, he darted around the room.
The kids in room 26 will hate me if I lose you, he said.
I felt sorry for Mr. Morales, so I scratched around a little. "Oh, there you are," he said, bending down to look at me. "Now let's get you back in your cage." "Not quite yet," I thought. He reached down to pick me up, and I scampered forward, just a few inches past his hand. "Don't do this to me, Humphrey," he said. "Cooperate." But I wasn't doing anything to him. I was doing something for him. "Work with me," he said, but this time to himself. "Maybe, hey, that's it." He looked down at me. "With your help, Humphrey." Mr. Morales really swung into action then. He raced upstairs. The thumping and bumping stopped. When he raced back downstairs, Willie and Brenda were close with him. "Close all the doors, Willie," he said. "But, Dad," Willie whined. "Close them," his father repeated firmly. "Now." Willie closed all the doors. "You two scared poor Humphrey with your screaming and poking and thumping. We may never see him again," he told them. Brenda burst into tears. "Humphrey's dead," she sobbed. "No, Humphrey's too smart for that," Mr. Morales told her. "But he will run away if you two aren't nice to him." "Right, right, right. You have to be pretty smart to be a principal. Now, do you want to help me get Humphrey back?" "Yes," the children shouted. Mr. Morales explained the plan. He said the only way they'd get me back in my cage was if they worked together. And they could only work together if they listened to him. Really listened. They were listening now. And they kept listening, too, because he told them the most important thing they could do was to be quiet. So they were quiet. "I'm pretty sure he's still in the room. Our job is to lure him back into his cage," Mr. Morales whispered. He put my cage in the middle of the floor. Then he went to the kitchen and got a handful of sunflower seeds. Willie and Brenda helped him make a trail of seeds across the floor leading up to the cage. "Good," said Mr. Morales. "Now we have to be very, very quiet and wait for Humphrey to pick up the seeds. But if you say anything or even move, you might scare him." "We'll be quiet, Dad," said Willie. Brenda agreed. They all sat on the sofa. "Do you think it will work?" Willie whispered. "Of course," Brenda answered. "Dad's smart." "Well, he's not the only one. I waited for a while. After all, the Morales children needed all the practice staying quiet they could get. When Willie got restless, I started skittering along the floor.
"I hear him," said Brenda.
"Shh," said Willie. I waited a few more seconds, then scrambled out of the corner and grabbed the closest seed. I could hear loud gasps from the children, but I pretended not to notice. I scurried toward the second seed. This plan Mr. Morales and I came up with was tasty, tasty, tasty. I could almost feel three pairs of eyes fixed on me, but I ignored them. I grabbed up the third and fourth seeds, hid them in my cheek pouch, then stopped right outside the open door of my cage. Inside, Mr. Morales had left a lovely pile of sunflower seeds. It was nice to be free, but my cage was home after all. Besides, until the day somebody fixes the lock that doesn't lock, I can get out whenever I want. The kids were still quiet, so I made a run for the cage. Mr. Morales quickly closed the door, and the children began to cheer.
"We did it," said Brenda. "Dad's the smartest man in the world," said Willie.
"Hey, you kids helped. When we cooperate and work together, we make a pretty good team," Mr. Morales told them.
"Lo mejor," Willie agreed. "The best."
Mr. Morales squatted down and winked at me. "Of course, Humphrey helped, too." "I'll say." The rest of the weekend with the Morales family was fine. Sometimes the kids started interrupting their dad or mom, but Mr. Morales just reminded them that they could be polite if they tried. Willie and Brenda tried. Mrs. Morales sold a house. It turns out that selling other people's houses is her job. So they celebrated with pizza and ice cream. Brenda learned to hold me gently. Willie even cleaned the poo out of my cage, which I appreciated. Life is good, I thought, as Mr. Morales drove me back to school Monday morning. Then I remembered Mrs. Brisbane and how she said I was a troublemaker and she was going to get rid of me. "Humphrey, You are a true friend, said Mr. Morales as he carried my cage back into room 26. I'll never forget what you did for me. As soon as school started on Monday, Heidi's mom came into the classroom and explained to everyone about taking me home on weekends. How many of you would be interested? Mrs. Hopper asked. Every single hand in the classroom was raised, every hand except one, Mrs. Brisbane's. Still, it was a pretty good week. I got a 90% on the vocabulary test. I'll bet Saya got 100%, but she still didn't raise her hand, even though she'd promised. And Aldo talked more and more every night. On Tuesday night, he leaned in close and asked, Humphrey, don't you ever wish you had a girlfriend? Like most hamsters, I'm pretty much of a loner, so I really hadn't thought about it before.
Not sure,
I squeaked. I would like one, said Aldo, a real nice girlfriend. I felt so sorry for Aldo. I squeaked extra loud when he performed his broom balancing act for me. I was still thinking about him on Wednesday. After everyone had left, while there was still light coming in the window, I meandered outside the cage to help myself to any mealworms that Heidi might have left behind when she fed me earlier in the day. The table was covered with newspapers, and while I nibbled, I browsed the news. All of life was there on the pages of the newspaper, births and deaths, lost pets, sad, 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 funny jokes, good news, and bad news. Then there were the ads. My, there were so many stores, not just Petorama, but Shoes-a-rama and Food-a-rama and Books Galore and Wide World of Tools. And there were other ads, too. One in particular caught my eye that afternoon. It read, Work Nights, Lonely, Want to Meet Others Who Work Nights, The Moonlighters Club, for people who work at night. Meetings are held during the day on weekdays, hikes and outings to restaurants, parks, plays, movies, and much more. There was a name and a phone number at the end. I could hardly believe it. This was exactly what Aldo needed. I could already see him, smiling and happy, going to parks and plays with the Moonlighters Club and having a girlfriend. But how could I get Aldo to read this ad? He'd probably just throw it away. Still, if I cut it out and left it in a place where he couldn't miss it, well, maybe. Hamsters can't do scissors, but we have nifty teeth. It took me a while to nibble the whole ad out neatly, but I did a pretty good job. Then I stood the clipping up against my cage. Aldo couldn't help but see it if he looked at me, which he always did. That evening, I was more anxious than usual for Aldo to arrive. When he turned on the lights, I squeaked, Hello, right away. Greetings to you, my little friend, said Aldo as he pushed his cart into the room. You sound like you have something on your mind.
You bet.
I tried to tell him. He ambled over to my cage and leaned down to look in. What's happening, Humphrey? He asked. I saw his eyes light on the scrap of newspaper. Hey, I can hardly see you. He reached out and pushed the clipping aside.
Read it!
I squeaked right out. Of course, he didn't understand. He didn't even look at what the ad said. He just set it down next to the cage and leaned in closer. I was squeaking a blue streak.
Look at it now.
Calm down, Humphrey. I've got a treat for you, said Aldo. He reached into his pocket and pulled out a tiny bit of carrot. Your pal Aldo would never forget you. My heart sank. You try to help a human, and they don't even pay attention. But as you know, I don't give up easily. I squeaked happily while he balanced his broom on one finger, as usual. But my mind was on the Moonlighters Club and how to get Aldo there. After he left, I scrambled out of my cage, picked up the newspaper clipping, and tucked it inside my notebook. Then I hid the notebook behind my mirror. If I didn't, somebody mean, like Mrs. Brisbane, might throw it away. I was still wondering what to do with it the next day when Mrs. Brisbane rolled in a cart with a big machine on it. This is the overhead projector, she told the class. I'm going to use it for some map work. When Mrs. Brisbane turned the machine on, a bright light was projected onto the wall. Then she placed a paper map on the glass, and suddenly that map showed up really big on the wall. She could write on it and draw on it, and you could see everything she wrote. A machine like this could come in very handy, I thought. So when Mrs. Brisbane turned the machine off, and sent my classmates off to lunch, I thought about that machine. When AJ cleaned my cage and changed my water and bedding, I thought about that machine. I thought about it so hard, I suddenly came up with a really, really, really good plan. But it would be difficult to carry out, and dangerous as well. Tip 5. If a hamster manages to escape his cage, you can sometimes lure him back in it with a trail of sunflower seeds. Guide to the Care and Feeding of Hamsters, Dr. Harvey H. Hammer. I'm Jeff Glover, and you've been listening to The World According to Humphrey by Betty G. Burney. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait until next Friday for the adventure to continue. But in the meantime, maybe you would like to write Humphrey and let him know how you're doing and what you like about his story so far. You can email your letter to the address geoff.glover@k21schools.org. And remember to join us next time as the story continues.
Ketchikan! This is Allison Shebjiolu. I teach first and second grade at the Tonga School of Arts and Sciences. Hey guys, it's Mrs. S. I wanted to share a song with you today, one that we had learned a little bit before spring break, and I wanted to bring it back on Zoom, so I'll see you on Zoom to sing it some more. But it's the water cycle moving around in a circle, and it goes splish splash as it does. The song is to She'll Be Coming Around the Mountain. Water moves in a cycle, yes it does. Splish, splash. Water moves in a cycle, yes it does. Splish, splash. It goes up as evaporation, forms clouds as condensation, falls down as precipitation, yes it does. Splish, splash. Water moves in a cycle, yes it does. Splish, splash. Water moves in a cycle, yes it does. Splish, splash. It collects in rivers and oceans, is constantly in motion. Water moves in a cycle, yes it does. Splish, splash. Way to go, you guys. Miss singing with you all. Well, I wanted to share a book with you today as well. And for radio, it is very appropriate because it's the book with no pictures. Yes, you heard it right. The book with no pictures. It's one of our favorite books that we read together. The kids read to me. They read to each other. We had a blast reading it and being silly with it. And it is called The Book with No Pictures. I almost had it read you on YouTube. No, I want to read it to you. The Book with No Pictures is by B.J. Novak. This is a book with no pictures. It might seem like no fun to have someone read you a book with no pictures. It probably seems boring and serious, except... dot, dot, dot. Here's how books work. Everything the words say, the person reading the book has to say. No matter what. That's the deal. That's the rule. So that means even if the words say blork, wait, what? That doesn't even mean anything. Blurf. Wait a second. What? This isn't the kind of book I wanted to read, and I have to say every word the book says? Uh-oh. I am a monkey who taught myself to read. Hey, I'm not a monkey. And now I am reading you this book with my monkey mouth in my monkey voice. That's not true. I'm not a monkey. Yes, I am a monkey. Also, I am a robot monkey. What? And my head is made of blueberry pizza. Wait a second. Is this whole book a trick? Can I stop reading, please? No? And now it's time for me to sing you my favorite song. Oh, a song? Your song? Do I really have to read this song? Glug, 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 my face is a bug. I eat ants for breakfast.
right off the rug. What? This book is ridiculous. Can I stop reading yet? No, there are more pages. I have to read the rest. My only friend in the whole wide world is a hippo named Boo Boo Butt. Boo Boo Butt. And also the kid I'm reading this book to is the best kid ever in the history of the entire world. Oh, is that so? And this kid is the smartest kid too, because this kid chose this book even though it had no pictures, because kids know this is the book that makes grown-ups have to say silly things. And make silly sounds like... Oh, no. Oh, no. Here it comes. Glurguaco! Magoofdadoo! Ay, ay, ay! Broog! 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 Pfeef! Blaggity, bliggity, blaggity, glibbity, glabbity, glabbity, glibbity. Beep, boop! Eee! Badoongy face! Oh my goodness. Please don't ever make me read this book again. It is so silly. In fact, it is completely and utterly preposterous. Next time, please, 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 please choose a book with no pictures. With pictures. Please? Because this is just too ridiculous to read. The end. Bonk. I didn't want to say that. Thank you for listening, friends. I miss you so much, and I wish you well. I wish you well. I wish you well. All through the day and night, I wish you well. House Dung King Sung, I will see you soon on Zoom and maybe this summer.
Hello, my name is Taylor McKenna, and I'm an English teacher at Schoenbar Middle School. I've written a poem for our town, for the faculty and staff at our school, and most importantly, for our students. My poem is called From Where I Sit. I am from this island town where the gal at the barbershop once offered to drive me home from school when I was nervous about snow my first winter, where the carpenter for our house fixed the drywall and then left 6 pounds of halibut in the freezer, where a quilter spreads the word and suddenly everyone's sewing wild, multicolor masks for hospital workers and first responders, where a pair of fitness experts from the rec figured out how to bring exercise classes into homes twice a week, keeping us strong with Zumba zooming. With an international airport that just happens to be on another island, so you have to explain to visitors how it works, how you have to take a ferry to catch a flight, and an airport ferry parking lot where we say our hellos and goodbyes, where people just show up to meet our returning basketball or ocean quiz bowl or little league baseball team because they're home, state champions, where folks showed up to cheer for our cheerleaders because they're home, state champions, and where, once, half the town showed up to witness the return of our AC/DC team, Division III national champions. I am from a middle school with a funny name that's hard to spell, S-C-H-O-E-N-B-A-R, where kids hang out with me by my door as official hallway greeters, where kids run coffee spots, donut shops, and yes, even pickle stands from their lockers, where kids can dribble it, spike it, and hit it over the Walker Field fence, where kids sing for their suppers and blast our bleachers with their version of YMCA. where kids survive in the wilderness with just a coffee can, a roll of string, and a box of matches. Where kids run marathons and pin opponents and catch fishing derby prize winners. Where many kids can speak two different languages, and sometimes three. Where kids aren't afraid of bees, spelling or geographic. Where kids dance to drums, doodle in ovoids, and weave dreams in cedar. Where kids proudly stand shoulder to shoulder every 9 weeks on the yellow line for honor roll. Where kids come to school, even though it's dark and rainy and blowing 40 and they have to walk. And now, despite this virus, I'm from a town and a school where kids continue to show up and give it their best, even when they can't leave the house.
I'd like to read a story called The Relatives Came. This is by Cynthia Rylant and illustrated by Stephen Gammel. Cynthia Rylant wrote other stories. She wrote Poppleton, Dog Heaven. She wrote Missing May. Probably a lot of kids know that one. There's a picture of her with her cat. So this is called When the Relatives Came, and she says it's for her Aunt Agnes Little and her kids. The illustrations in this book are lovely. They're colored pencil, really soft, nice colors. It was in the summer of the year when the relatives came. They came up from Virginia. They left when their grapes were nearly purple enough to pick, but not quite. They had an old station wagon that smelled like a real car, and in it they put an ice chest full of soda pop and some boxes of crackers and some bologna sandwiches, and up they came from Virginia. They left at 4 in the morning when it was still dark, before the birds were even awake. They drove all day long and into the night, and while they traveled along, they looked at the strange houses and different mountains, and they thought about their almost purple grapes back home. They thought about Virginia, but they thought about us too, waiting for them. So they drank up all their pop and ate up all their crackers and traveled up all those miles until finally they pulled into our yard. And there's a picture of the car with suitcases and coolers falling off, and three kids running through the grass to meet their relatives. Then it was hugging time. Talk about hugging. Those relatives just passed us all around their car, pulling us against their wrinkled Virginia clothes, crying sometimes. They hugged us for hours. Then it was into the house, and so much laughing and shining faces and hugging in the doorways. You'd have to go through at least 4 different hugs to get from the kitchen to the front room. Those relatives. You can see through the windows of the house. Grandmas and aunties and uncles and kids and moms and dads and cousins all hugging. Finally, after a big supper, 2 or 3 times round until we got a turn at the table each, there was quiet talk, and we were in 2s and 3s throughout the house. The relatives weren't particular about beds, which was good since there weren't any extras, so a few squeezed in with us, and the rest slept on the floor. Some with their arms thrown over the closest person, or some with an arm across one person and a leg across another. It was different going to sleep with all that new breathing in the house. And you could probably imagine when you're at a sleepover with your friends or your family or your cousins, and how everyone just flops around on the couch or the floor or the beds to get some rest. The relatives stayed for weeks and weeks. They helped us tend the garden, and they fixed any broken things they could find. They ate up all our strawberries and melons, then promised we could eat up all their grapes and peaches when we came to Virginia. None of us thought about Virginia much. We were so busy hugging and eating and breathing together. Finally, after a long time, the relatives loaded up their ice chest and headed back to Virginia at 4 a.m. We stood there in our pajamas and waved them off in the dark. We watched the relatives disappear down the road. Then we crawled back into our beds that felt too big and too quiet. We fell asleep. And while the relatives drove on all day long and into the night, and while they traveled along, they looked at the strange houses and different mountains, and they thought about their dark purple grapes waiting at home in Virginia. But they thought about us, too, missing them, and they missed us. And when they were finally home in Virginia, they crawled into their silent, soft beds and dreamed about the next summer. And at the very back of the book, there's a picture of grapes that grow on a grapevine in bunches, like you might get them from the store. If you've ever seen them growing, if they're going to be purple grapes, they start out green. And then in the sun and the warm air, they turn a darker and darker color. So those relatives got back to Virginia in time to harvest their grapes and their peaches. Maybe think about your relatives. You might not get to see them right now because we're all kind of staying away in our houses. But maybe you want to draw a picture of all the relatives that you have, the people that you'd like to visit. And then maybe you could send that to them. That's a way to keep in touch. Come on back for another story later.
Hi, y'all. This is Penny Raniger, the Houghton Elementary librarian. I wanted to let you know how very much I miss your faces, your laughter, and your curiosity. I hope to see you all again so very, very soon, but until then, be brave, be kind, and stay curious.
Hey all you cool cats and dolphins, this is Mr. Ryan, and I am lucky enough to teach third grade at Howling. I miss seeing everyone over there, and I can't wait to see you all again. Stay safe and remember to wash your hands. Love you all.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ms. Rochelle. I am a paraprofessional at Houghton School. I've been also helping serve school lunches for our kids 18 years younger. So if you have time, please come by to pick up lunch or breakfast. Na miss ko kayong lahat. I miss your smiling faces, and I hope to see you again soon. And I hope you're still reading at home.
Bye!
You've been listening to a special program brought to you by KRBD and the Ketchikan Education Association. Thanks to all the teachers who recorded themselves and sent in those recordings to create this show.